You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Okay, somebody just sent me an email and said, hey, what is this Maximus thing? All right, the movie Gladiator, if you haven't seen it, come on, especially the opening scene. The rest of it is all right. The opening scene, I don't know who did it, but they were a military guy, okay, because they act like it. All right, here's Maximus. All right, so he's walking, blah, blah. Okay, so Maximus, he gives the orders to his Roman, you know, division in Germania, and they're going to go smoke the Germans, right, in this big, muddy Germanic field, right? So he tells the artillery what he wants. He tells his chief of staff what he wants. And then he takes, he's going to lead the cavalry on some kind of flanking movement. Actually, it's not a flanking movement. They attack him from the rear. So he has the cavalry assembled, and now he's going to talk to him right here. But I don't like the music in the background.
3 weeks from now.
Hold on. So let me find, I'm not doing that. All right, here you go.
You are what?
God almighty, with the commercials, YouTube. I always wondered how YouTube was ever going to make money just like having videos to watch. But now we know. Okay, here's Maximus. This is where, you know, the whole echoes in eternity. He's got this crazy-looking German shepherd with him, too. He's a badass dog, right? So now Maximus, he squats down. He's got mud in his hands, right? He's smelling the mud. He looks at the dog stares back, and the dog looks at him like, somebody's getting their ass kicked today, I know that.
Strength and honor, strength and honor.
Strength and honor.
Strength and honor.
Then he gets on his horse, got a sergeant major with him. You can tell he's a sergeant major because he looked like he's a, you know... He looks road hard and put away wet. They're probably the same age, but the sergeant major, man, he's just a grizzled old dude. So a typical senior enlisted guy, right? So Maximus gets on his horse, got a fur cape on, looking kind of cool. Everybody else getting ready to fight.
At my signal, unleash hell.
Yeah. Let those German bitches have it. Okay, those are the Germans yelling. Woo!
Those are catapults. Infantry form up for advance. Archers ready. Archers!
I love this shit, man. This scene is awesome. When I first saw this in the theater, you know, my sons wanted to go, Dad, let's go see Gladiator. I'm like, whatever. We go. In this scene, I was like sitting in my seat, and then I'm like... Then I'm like sitting on I sit up and I put my elbows on my knees and my hand to my chin, and I'm just like, I'm watching it. This is awesome. No! So Maximus rides over to the cavalry boys. Got his dog and the sergeant major with him. They're all assembled in kind of a school circle on their horses. Not sure what he says right there.
3 weeks from now, I will be harvesting my crops. Imagine where you will be. And it will be so. Hold the line. Stay with me. You find yourself alone, riding in green fields with the sun on your face. Do not be troubled. or you are in Elysium. And you're already dead!
Little pre-combat humor. Gotta love that. Okay, here it comes. They just showed the dog. The dog's a crazy-looking German Shepherd. He's not a normal German Shepherd. He's got like a wider snout, and he's got this crazy look in his eye. But here's the line right here, and it's true.
What we do in life echoes in eternity.
Boom. What we do in life echoes in eternity. So then they get on their horses. And they conduct an envelopment, and it's a pretty awesome scene. If you've never seen it, I would recommend it. So that's where the line comes from. Okay, that's where the line comes from. And what you see, what you'll hear in the whole Me Lie thing audio today, 20 years later, is you'll hear their struggle with what they did that day, and how you can never get over it. And I would tell you this: one of the things that I've concluded after listening to all of this is, why the fuck didn't anybody teach me about this? Why didn't they rub my snout in it and say, hey, Mac, this is what happens if you don't keep your honor clean. These are the tangible things that will happen to people. We owe it to each other, okay? This is hard, okay? But you can't go down that road. To go down that road is to go down this road, and nobody needs or wants it. And because, look, law work class, come on, man, that's bullshit. It's bullshit. You know, SJA comes in. Show this stuff. This is real. This will make a dent. It makes your point. And what you'll get from them is, can we talk about the worlds of engagement? How does this apply? How does this apply? You hear terms like free fire zone in, you know, and it's like they don't have the technical understanding. It's a fire support term, you know. And you can, and another term you'll hear is they're VC sympathizers. Okay, so what does that mean? That's a civilian, right? Yeah. So, you know, you hear this poorly led shit show, and that's the audio you hear. Okay, so let me just go over a few headlines, news headlines today. Number one on the early bird, as relations worsen, Iran says U.S. sanctions may violate the nuclear deal. Oh, I hate when that happens. I hate when we're the one violating the deal. Secretary Mattis is going to brief the Senate on the fight against ISIS. So, interesting little news blurb this morning. U.S. sanctions may violate the nuclear deal. All right. The Space Corps could disrupt DOD capabilities, warns Selva. In defense news. The whole concept of the Space Corps. General Paul Selva, Vice Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, told the Senate Armed Service Committee that the time is not right for a conversation about a separate Space Corps or Space Force, adding that creating one would complicate the command and control of the current space constellation. Selva was on Capitol Hill to testify. This is like Captain Kirk shit. He was on Capitol Hill to testify at his reconfirmation hearing to continue for a second two-year term as vice chairman. Based on statements from the senators, he will easily be awarded another term. So that's where that little headline comes out of. Number three, Chinese warships en route to the Baltic. That's all right. We don't care about that. 1 year on, Beijing steps up military drive in the South China Sea. Here we go, sports fans. And this is out of the Asian Review, the Nikkei Asian Review, so that would make it Japanese by nature. A year after China brushed off an international arbitration court's ruling that rejected its claim of sovereignty over a huge swath of the South China Sea, the country remains determined on populating the disputed area with military bases. The ruling in a suit filed by the Philippines has become irrelevant, aided in large part by Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte's conciliatory stance towards China, which is capitalizing on international inertia over the situation. Then there's a cool little map. I would recommend. Gives you an idea where the Spratly Islands are, and a couple different lines claimed by the Philippines, claimed by the Chinese. Shows you where the Scarborough Shoals are. And then the article goes on. A 43-year-old fisherman in Subic welcomed the resumption of fishing around Scarborough Shoal, more than 200 kilometers from the northern Philippine town. "We are no longer chased off by Chinese ships," he said. "Chinese come at night and catch big fish, though." In 2012, China began taking control of the Scarborough and the surrounding fishing grounds frequented by Filipino fishermen. Beijing claims the shoal called, I don't even want to say it in Chinese, is located within the 9-dash line, which Beijing uses to demarcate its claim over a major portion of the South China Sea. Now, the nine-dash line, right, runs right off the coast of the Philippines. It goes down right off the coast of Indonesia, and then it turns west and then north. It goes right off the coast of Vietnam and back up to China. So the 9-dash line is essentially the entire South China Sea. Chinese, man, they're incredible. All right. So let me get back to the headlines. Was China's military drill in Tibet really just an exercise in logistics? Of course it wasn't. What are we, stupid? If you're doing an exercise in logistics in Tibet, what are you really doing? You're projecting power. Thousands of tons of equipment have been moved into the region since the start of a border dispute with India. That's right. Do you think we Chinese are going to let the Indians treat us like bitches? No. The vast haul was transported to a region south of Kunlun Mountains in northern Tibet by the Western Theater Command, which oversees the rest of regions of Xinjiang and Tibet and handles border issues with India, the People's Liberation Daily said, the official mouthpiece of China's military. The project took place late last month, involved hardware being moved simultaneously by road and rail from across the entire region. Yeah. India, you want to mess with us? Boom. Stand by. The PLA wanted to demonstrate it could easily overpower its Indian counterparts, said Beijing. So there you have it. And then, that'll do it. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're gonna listen to audio from My Lai. You'll learn more. Again, the audio you're going to hear is from, I think it's from a program that was produced called 4 Hours in My Lai. Yeah, imagine that, 4 Hours. As is the case with most of these stupid incidents, it is a very small, very short period of time. And what happens is the nature of what gets done reverberates, you know, through your life and across the planet. It's amazing. So anyway, you're gonna hear the cost of what it is to fail at the point of confrontation. You're gonna hear how that people carry that, and not only you'll hear more audio from Vietnamese survivors who happened to probably be in that ditch, and what saved them was dead bodies on top of them. They were wounded but not killed, and then they just laid still as people died all around them. But it's astounding, and when you read the actual investigation, Hackworth talked about that this General Pierce, he's the guy who holds the hearings and does the investigation. He's like beside himself. that how does nobody, and you have two pieces of data that are significant in the wider investigation that didn't happen in Vietnam. One is what the aviation brigade told you, and it wasn't simply one pilot in My Lai. It was a whole series of pilots who corroborated what Hugh Thompson said. Hugh Thompson landed in the middle of it, right? So there's one data piece that was not hearsay, was eyeball observation of what happened there. Okay, the other data piece comes from the advisor chain that tells you that somewhere between 400 and 500 people were killed there, and nothing gets done. The investigation the chief of staff did of the AmeriCal division when he went down and talked to 30 and 40 soldiers of Alpha Company, 1st Battalion, 20th Infantry Regiment. Anybody see any atrocities? No, sir. That was it. Two-page document. First, it was delivered in oral form, and then when more questions were started to be asked, then the division commander asked the chief of staff, and I forget their names, forgive me, to put it in writing. So it became a two-page investigation. I mean, it's stunning stuff. And so you'll hear about it. I mean, it's, but again, I think it's as relevant today as it was, because of this whole concept of keep your honor clean and leadership at the point of confrontation. So you'll hear a bunch of it and more of it coming up next here on a Wednesday, right here on All Marine Radio, on the All Warrior Radio Network. This hour of All Marine Radio is brought to you by our friends at Battle Mug, home of the world famous Battle Mug. Starts with 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at battlemug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out, battlemug.com.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner, proven and dependable.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends, these are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. All right, I don't know that there's any appropriate bumper music to transition to what you're about to hear, but 20 years after, you're going to hear soldiers, some of them you heard yesterday, talking about the massacre at My Lai.
Can you tell me, Venato, what this book is? Why you've kept it?
He's got a scrapbook in his lap, and in the scrapbook, it's clear pages with articles in it, and they're all about My Lai, pictures and article.
This is my life. This is my past. This is my present. This is my future, and I keep it. To remind me, but it's always there. Don't you know? This is it. This is my life. This is everything. This is the way I am. This is what made me this way.
My Lai today, a small hamlet close to the coast of central Vietnam. On their maps, the Americans called the area Pinkville, and that is how the massacre was known at first, the Pinkville Massacre. Today, the villagers are farmers and fishermen, just as they were 20 years ago. But then, My Lai was at the center of a bitterly contested region in a cruel war. Early one morning in March 1968, Charlie Company of the 1st 20th American Infantry Battalion landed here by helicopter and attacked the village. By the time they left, 4 hours later, the young GIs of Charlie Company had killed hundreds of old men, women, and children in cold blood. The village of My Lai had ceased to exist.
Let's go.
In Fort Benning, Georgia, new infantry recruits to the American Army receive their first rounds of ammunition and take their first steps as soldiers.
To kill. You wanted soldiers highly motivated.
I just want to skip to, they do this thing about Fort Benning and what you learn there.
You are taught how to deal with the enemy when they come face to face with it. They're trained to be killers. They're trained from their early weeks in basic training. They're taught how to use a bayonet.
Stroke to the growing series. Move.
Kill. They're taught the spirit of the bayonet. The spirit of the bayonet is to kill.
Kill.
He wanted soldiers highly motivated. His way of motivating them was to have a response, a command and response from the soldiers. And he would say, what is the spirit of the bayonet? And to kill, Sergeant, to kill. What is the spirit of the bayonet? To kill. So soldiers were motivated along these lines.
What a spirit of the bayonet!
Kill, kill, kill! With the gold blues, kill!
And that would be their response. And he would drill them into a state of readiness. And he would just inspire them through his speaking and through his talking and through his teaching of what the spirit was. As one of the sergeants who trained the men of Charlie Company, I was very pleased with the way they turned out. They turned out to be very good soldiers.
That's using the bayonet against the enemy, okay? And what's interesting is there's not an NCO that seems to struggle with this, which is kind of interesting.
The men of Charlie Company arrived in Vietnam from Hawaii in December 1967. They'd had no combat experience, but had performed well in training and were considered the best company in their battalion. Their average age was 20. They'd been drawn together from all over America. An army report would later describe them as a typical cross-section of American youth assigned to most combat units.
Majority of the men in C Company were just your average normal Americans. Most of us were all middle income, middle class families. They were from all across the United States, Indiana. I was from Pennsylvania. So I'd say you had a good cross section of the total population of the United States at that point in time. A lot of times when we were first in country, we would go to the villages up and down the highway, Highway 1. You'd play with the kids in between pulling guard duty. And one bridge in particular, there was a boy that always hung around up there with the GIs. We nicknamed him Six Fingers because he had an extra thumb. He had six fingers. But you'd always take him stuff, candy, pop. Take pictures with them, you know, GIs with the kids. You got to meet a lot of people.
He's a radio operator.
There was no one else but us. We were in this company, in this place, all alone. We had a company of men that all came from one country, all came from the same culture. And
this guy named Michael Bernhardt, he's a tunnel rat, and he did not participate in the shooting that day.
We were dropped 10,000 miles away, and we felt close that way because there was nobody else to feel close to.
American soldiers on patrol in Vietnam in 1968. This was the job of the infantry, the common grunts. And barely a month after their arrival in Vietnam, Charlie Company were deployed on operations like these in Quang Nai province, around the area they called Pinkville, which was known to be sympathetic to the enemy.
The province actually has a long history. It's almost like Al Anbar. Long history of doesn't cooperate with the French, doesn't cooperate with the Japanese, doesn't cooperate with anybody. The Chinese, anybody, they are it's a rested province, and it is that way during the Vietnam War. It is the same.
When we first started losing members of the company.
But again, when My Lai happens, just know this, they're in country for 7 weeks when it happens. It's not like these guys are grizzled, battered, you know, 10-month, 12-month guys that are sick of it. This is a new organization to Vietnam.
It was mostly through booby traps and snipers. We never really got into a main conflict per se, where you could see who was shooting at you and you could actually shoot back from one-on-one. Booby traps was the main problem.
Newsreel pictures show clearly enough the effect of booby traps. In the weeks leading up to My Lai, Charlie Company experienced many scenes like these. In a unit of little over 120 men, they lost 4 killed and 38 wounded, almost all by mines, booby traps, and snipers. they could seldom find an enemy to shoot back at. And as their frustration grew, the distinction between combatants and civilians rapidly eroded.
I see the enemy, yes. But who is the enemy? You don't have little kids over there that will shoot you or stab you in the back when you walk.
His name is Verando Simpson, and you heard him yesterday as a young guy. Now, this is 20 years later.
Boy, you know, who is the enemy? How can you distinguish between the enemy, the good or the bad? All of them look the same. That's the reason the war was so different. You know, it wasn't like Germans over here or Japanese over there. They all look like North and the South. You know, so how can you tell?
Within a few weeks of arriving in the country, men from Charlie Company had already begun systematically mistreating their prisoners. There were reports of random killings and rapes. One GI took this snapshot of an interrogation involving torture. In mid-February, Lieutenant Kelly, leader of the 1st Platoon, threw an old man down a well and shot him. No disciplinary action was taken.
When I saw American soldiers committing acts that would be called atrocities if somebody else had done them, I began to think that maybe I was wrong. Maybe I had been just too naive all my life, that this was the way things really were. I tried not to think like that. I tried to keep my own values together, but it wasn't easy. Little by little, I began to see that this group of men was getting out of control.
On the 15th of March, plans were drawn up for an attack on My Lai, believed by intelligence to be the HQ of a Viet Cong battalion. Charlie Company was to mount the main attack, and fierce battle was anticipated. Colonel Aran Henderson, brigade commander, expressed irritation at past failures to close with the enemy and demanded more aggression. Lieutenant Colonel Frank Barker drew up detailed plans, and his orders were passed on to Charlie Company by their CO, Captain Ernest Medina. No one in the chain of command has ever accepted responsibility for what happened, but Charlie Company had little doubt about what they had to do.
The understanding or the order that was given was to kill everybody in the village. So
now, this guy's a squad leader, was a squad leader in Charlie Company.
Someone asked if that meant the women and children, and the order was everyone in the village, because those people that were in the village, the women, the kids, the old men, were VC, and they were Viet Cong themselves, or they were sympathetic to the Viet Cong. They were not sympathetic to the South Vietnamese Army, and they weren't sympathetic to the Americans. They weren't giving us any assistance. They weren't helping us in the war effort whatsoever.
So it was quite clear that no one was to be spared?
It was quite clear that no one was to be spared in that village.
My understanding was we were going in, we were going to get into one hell of a fight, and we were going to kick some ass when we got down. There wasn't going to be anybody left. It didn't turn out that way.
Now, let me just tell you, the parameters of that were Saturday morning. The civilians would be at the market, because I guess that's traditionally when they went. But the intelligence is so wrong. This is post-Tet. The VC are licking their wounds, and they are not near this place. They're not there. And so it's a bullshit. It's bullshit intelligence and a bullshit operation. And so these guys are told, you know, anybody who's left in the village after all the women and children will be out at the market, blah, blah, blah. They're bad people. Okay. Not what they find.
News film of a helicopter assault. One of thousands conducted by the Americans during the Vietnam War. The attack on My Lai started in the same way, just after 7 o'clock in the morning. It was a Saturday. According to intelligence, all civilians would have gone to market. Anyone still in the village would be Viet Cong. But intelligence was wrong. As the troops embarked, 12 minutes flying time away, many villagers were still finishing breakfast. At 7:22, the first helicopters left for My Lai.
Next, the first of villagers here is a preparation that gets fired into the LZ. They're essentially dusting the LZ off. Okay, so artillery hits in the LZ. Cobra gunships, I guess, make gun runs on the LZ, and then the helos come booming in.
First helicopters appeared over My Lai at 7:35 a.m. There was no hostile fire. Within 20 minutes, all 120 men and five officers of Charlie Company were landed. There was no opposition.
I was getting ready to work in the fields when the helicopters flew in and started firing. People didn't know where to hide. They shot some people and rounded up others. They told us to sit down, so we sat down. Stand up, so we stood up. We thought they would let us go. But they pushed us into a ditch and they shot everybody dead. My children and I were in with dead people. Their dead bodies weighed down on me.
I was 19 when I went to Vietnam. I was a rifleman specialist, fourth class. I was trained to kill, but the reality of killing someone is different from training and pulling the trigger. No.
So you knew when you went into the village that if you found women, old men, children, anything that was living, you knew that you were going to have to kill them? That day.
Women and children to dogs and cats, yes. Yes.
So,
but I didn't know it, that I was going to do that. I knew the women and children was there, but for me to say that I was going to kill them, I didn't know I was going to do that until it happened. I didn't know I was going to kill anyone. I didn't want to kill anyone. I wasn't raised up to kill. Now, she was running with her back from a tree line, but she was carrying something. I didn't know if it was a weapon or what, but it was a woman. You know, I knew it was a woman. I didn't want to shoot a woman, you know, but I was given an order to shoot. So I'm thinking that she had a weapon running. So when I shot and I turned over, it was a baby, you know, shot her by three or four times. And the bullet just went through and shot the baby, too, you know. And I turned over and I saw the baby face where we're half gone. You know?
So when I say what we do in life echoes in eternity, the level of detail, he lives that every day. And I don't think we communicate that to young Marines, and that's why they need to see this kind of shit.
And I just blinked. I just went. The training came to me, the programming to kill. And I just started killing.
What do you mean you just started killing? Did you go looking for people to kill or what?
You didn't have to look. It was there. They was trying to get away. But they was just there. It wasn't hard to kill. It wasn't hard to find anyone to kill.
Honestly, I mean, you listen to it, it's stunning audio to hear, you know, in the detail that these guys will tell it. And then they show a sign that says, at this post, the Americans killed 102 people. And then this is going to be audio from an older woman.
Không có gì. Ở đây thì làm ăn bình thường.
Nothing was happening. Nothing was happening here. It was a very normal life when the helicopters came and the troops surrounded us. They were firing their guns over there, and she points. They blasted away, and people were dying. Oh, it was so horrible. I pushed my son into the paddy field and lay on top of him. I told him, don't cry. The Americans have shot everyone. Don't cry and see if we can survive. For a while, I didn't hear any noise. I was alive because there was corpses on top of me. I lifted my head and saw Americans pointing here and there incessantly. Those who were still alive were shot again and again. Then there was no more. It makes me so unhappy. It's so hard. I miss my mother. I miss my children. I think of them lying there dead, and my heart is cut to pieces. The more I think about it, the more I want to cry.
That day in my life, I was personally responsible for killing between 20 and 25 people. About 25 people, personally.
Then
from shooting them, to cutting their throats, to scalping them, to cutting off their hands, and cutting out their tongue. I did that.
Why did you do all that? You didn't tell me. Why did you kill them and do that?
I just went. My mind just went. I wasn't the only one that did it. A lot of other people did it. I just killed. Once I started the training, the whole programming part of killing, it just came out.
But your training didn't tell you to scalp people or to cut ears?
No. No. But a lot of people were doing it. So I just followed suit. I just lost all sense of direction. A purpose. I just start killing any kind of way I could kill. It just came. I didn't know I had it in me. But like I said, after I killed the child, my whole mind just went. It just went. And once you start, it's very easy to keep on. Once you start. The hardest part is to kill, but once you kill, that's become easier to kill the next person and the next one and the next one. Because I had no feelings or no emotions or no nothing, no direction. I just killed.
The most disturbing thing I saw was one boy. And this was something that, you know, this is what haunts me from the whole ordeal down here. You know, this boy with his arm shot off, shot up, half hanging on. And he just had this bewildered look in his face, and I'm like, what did I do? What's wrong? He was just, you know, it's hard to describe. Couldn't comprehend.
He was a radio operator.
I shot the boy. killed him. And it's, I'd like to think of it more or less as a mercy killing, because somebody else would have killed him in the end. But it wasn't right.
Throughout the morning of March the 16th, a photographer and reporter from an army newspaper followed Charlie Company through My Lai. These black and white photos, taken on an army camera, did not show what was happening to the people whose homes were burning or the fate of villagers rounded up by the GIs. But the photographer was also carrying his own camera.
I happened upon a group of GIs surrounding these people. And one of the American GIs yelled out, "Hey, he's got a camera." So they kind of all dispersed just a little bit. And I came up on him, and looking at the photograph, I noticed the one girl was kind of frantic, and an older woman trying to protect a small child. And the older woman in front was just, you know, kind of pleading, trying to begging and that. And then another person, that woman, was buttoning her blouse and holding a small baby. Okay, I took the photograph. I thought they were going to question the people. But just as soon as I turned and walked away, I heard firing. I looked around over the corner of my shoulder. I saw the people drop. I just kept on walking. At the time, it was just, you know, capturing a reaction. But when you look at it later on in life, you know now these people are dead. They were shot. Just kind of an eerie type feeling that you, that goes over, you know, goes through your whole body. And you think back, could I have prevented this? How could I have prevented this? And that's a question I still kind of, you know, ask myself today.
He took the pictures that ultimately appear around the world. With his personal camera, it's a color camera. So the images that you've seen that made My Lai famous come from his personal camera that he took. If you look at the official pictures that he took as an army journalist, it looks like any other sweep through any other Vietnamese village, right? You see people, you see soldiers speaking to them, you see huts, you see soldiers lighting those huts on fire. Stuff like that. All right. So stuff that was pretty typical during the war from journalism. It's only the pictures he took with his personal camera that tell the true story of what happened that day.
You lined up people? You were one of the people who was mowing down big groups of people?
A group of about 10.
So the answer to that is no. What the reporter's asking him about is Callie herded people into the ditch, groups of 50, groups of 40, and thereabout. And then he ordered initially a Hispanic soldier to shoot him, the first group. And he started, then he stopped. And so Callie manned the machine gun. And he did that for the subsequent groups.
Yes.
What happened? Did you round them up?
We just round them up. Put them in a circle. And put me, a couple more guys, and just put the M16 on automatic. Just mowed them down. Just killed them.
Have you ever seen any photographs of the people you killed?
Yes.
Have you got those photographs?
I have photographs of the people I killed.
Which photographs are they?
Man, a child, a woman, and a baby.
How can you bear to look at those today?
because this is my life. This is my life. Even if I don't open a book, I see it. In my nightmares. If I never open this book, it's still there.
And that's what, you hear that? That freezes you.
During the...
That freezes you, right? Listening to that audio? Holy shit. You know, how can you bear to look at it? Look at it. I see it everywhere I go. And that's what young Marines, young soldiers, that's what, you don't need to give them, that's why this stuff is so powerful. Keep your honor clean. You have to live with this every day of your life in a way that you can't even fathom right now. But look at this guy. He was a what do they call him, 11 Bravo. He was an 0311 Marine. And he lives with it. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll continue here in a moment. And then Bob Nielsen's going to join us. Nielsen, he sends me this. He was pissed yesterday. He listened to this. He told me early this morning. He listened to the two segments yesterday twice. He said I was rip shit because of the way this painted us. He said, but you know what? People need to hear it. He said it's gut wrenching to me. He said, I think any Vietnam veteran who hears this, because we all got painted this way. So that's what I want to do next is to bring those guys on and to let them talk about it. How did this affect you? You know? And so we'll take a break. More of All Marine Radio coming up next on your home for All Marine Radio, the All Warrior Radio Network. Are you looking for the perfect gift for somebody who's in the military, for a first responder, for a hunter, for an outdoorsman? Or somebody that just likes cool military stuff? I've got the perfect gift for you. The Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at BattleMug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out. BattleMug.com.
My name is Juan Perez, Jr. I joined the military in 98. I commissioned as an officer. But I always had in mind the idea that I would go into the special operations community, particularly special forces. I was accepted to go into selection, and I attended on September 8th of 2001. As I was making my departure out of the military, there was that uncertainty. What do I do next? How do I repurpose my skills in a way that's not only meaningful to me, but also that provides for my family and provides an increase in a way of living, a quality of life. The Global South Foundation has resources when it comes to anything from building resumes to how to relate to a CEO in conversation, how to basically, again, repurpose that which I had learned in a career in special operations, dealing at the strategic and operational level. How do I take that and then turn it towards entrepreneurial spirit into business development? And how do I translate that so somebody can see that value? And in doing so, I landed a magnificent and very rewarding career. I'm the VP of operations for an IT company called BuildSourced. What I say to veterans getting out, be bold. Be bold when you go to network. Go out to the Global South website, look at what events they have lined up, attend those events, you know, and participate. A lot of the events they hold, they're of key importance in this network. Go out there and engage, just like you would engage in a combat zone, you know, when you're networking there. With folks that don't share necessarily your language, your culture, or your background, and yet we still make it happen. How can we not make it happen here?
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.